President Trump signs an executive order to ban technology from foreign adversaries.
The order itself does not mention China or Huawei, but it's very clear from everything that's going on that that's the principal target here.
And Pinterest reports its first earnings as a public company.
I think investors are ready to be pleased and excited.
Plus, who pays tariffs? This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we get into our main story this morning, the Trump administration's telecom ban, here's what you missed. First, there's a slew of tariff news for you. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said that the U.S. was making progress in resolving steel and aluminum tariffs with Mexico and Canada. That's something that was welcomed by Canada's foreign minister, Chrystia Freeland, who said a resolution would be necessary in order for Canada to approve the USMCA. That's the new NAFTA trade agreement.
We believe that these tariffs need to be lifted. They need to be lifted for the benefit of both of our countries. We are glad that we have achieved an agreement on the new NAFTA, and we very much think that free trade in steel and aluminum should be a part of that agreement.
The White House also said that it would delay for 6 months a decision regarding tariffs on European and Japanese cars. And Mr. Mnuchin also said that U.S. officials would most likely travel to Beijing next week to continue trade negotiations with China. All of this begs the question, who actually pays tariffs? That's being explored by our chief economics commentator, Greg Ipp, in his latest column. He says the case of one inflatable boat company, which is bearing most of the tariff brunt, is typical.
They're a small company. They have 30 employees. And essentially, for many decades, they have imported these inflatable boats like kayaks and fishing skiffs. And they're all made by three suppliers who have factories in China. And starting earlier this year, they had to raise their prices because they were hit with a 10% tariff. Now, they didn't just sort of sit around. They did try and find alternatives. They actually persuaded one supplier to move production to Vietnam. So those particular boats come in without a tariff, and they didn't have to raise the price. So in their instance, you can see quite directly how the tariff is affected. For the most part, it was paid for by Sea Eagle's final customers, who are individuals, you know, who want to buy recreational boats for their families. To the extent that they instead bought the products that were now made in Vietnam, they avoided the tariff. But it is clear that the bulk of the tariff was borne by Americans, not by the Chinese.
And California investigators found that PG&E's equipment sparked the deadliest wildfire in state history. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection said it had determined that a PG&E electric transmission line near the town of Pulga, California, ignited last year's campfire. That's the fire that ultimately killed 85 people and destroyed the town of Paradise. The finding puts additional pressure on PG&E, which is already facing billions of dollars in fire-related liability costs. Now, our main story this morning, an executive order that President Trump signed late on Wednesday. It's an order that lets the U.S. ban telecommunications gear from foreign adversaries. Although it didn't explicitly name an adversary, we report that the order is widely believed to target Chinese firms like Huawei and ZTE. Charlie Turner has been speaking to our reporter, John McKinnon, about why the Trump administration decided to issue the order now.
Now, John, this announcement came in a press release, didn't it? And didn't it mention any specific countries or companies?
That's right. And the order itself does not mention China or Huawei, but it's very clear from everything that's going on that that's the principal target here. The order speaks about foreign adversaries and companies that are under the control of a foreign adversary.
This is tied to worries that companies from countries, including China, are actively engaged in spying and hacking.
Right. And that's been a big concern for a long, long time, particularly for members of Congress who are on the intelligence committees and who are worried that, our networks are really exposed to all kinds of dangers.
Hasn't this order been in the works for over a year? Why did the action come just now?
That's a great question. It's Probably a combination of things. I think that there was some division of opinion within the administration about how to approach this problem. And, you know, there were some legal concerns about just singling out particular companies or particular individuals. And so, and frankly, there were also some concerns from U.S. companies that have Huawei equipment in particular already installed in their networks that they might be required to rip it out or replace it, which would cost them a lot of money.
And these carriers are mostly rural telecom carriers, aren't they?
That's right. Big carriers have basically stopped using Huawei and ZTE type equipment since a congressional report came out in 2012 that raised a lot of concerns about security risks.
What kind of impact should this order have on Huawei and ZTE?
You know, the immediate impact on them is probably not that great in terms of their business in the United States because it's already so small. ZTE used to be kind of a player in the handset market, but even that has kind of dwindled. And Huawei, since 2012, has been limited basically to selling to these rural carriers who, by the way, think very highly of Huawei's equipment. But the broader implications are probably for overseas markets. You know, this will help the U.S. kind of sell its national security message to other countries that, you know, they need to start getting rid of this equipment too.
That's right. And that comes at the same time Huawei gets a large majority of its revenues from outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it also comes, John, as obviously China and the U.S. are involved in, you know, a trade fight that's verging on a trade war.
That's true. This will certainly have some bearing on that and probably, you know, dial up the economic pressure on China somewhat. You know, it's interesting that a part of the order seems to say that the U.S. will do a initial determination over the next 40 days about, you know, where the threats actually exist. So that's another window during which the U.S. can kind of hang this over China's head, and, you know, as a threat.
That was sort of my next question. What is the process for this order taking effect? Is it going to be at least a month?
The initial assessment, which seems to be a process involving a lot of government agencies to determine the major threats here, that'll take 40 days. And I believe within 150 days from now, the administration will put out some sort of rules for implementing this whole order. And there may be some interim rules before then.
For our full coverage of Huawei, Chinese telecom, and trade negotiations, you can head to WSJ.com. On to markets. Overall, they're pretty calm as investors await any updates regarding ongoing trade negotiations between the U.S. and China. That means that today we can turn our attention to a single company, Tesla. Late yesterday, T. Rowe Price, one of Tesla's largest investors, said it had sold the majority of its shares. Our markets reporter Steve Russolillo explains.
So one of Tesla's biggest shareholders, T. Rowe Price, they're a large asset manager in the U.S., they put out a filing on Wednesday disclosing that they've cut their stake in Tesla by about 81%, so going down to 1.7 million shares from 8.9 million. So in a nutshell, that means that one of Tesla's biggest shareholders is selling out, and it could be for a variety of reasons. One of them being the stock is down about 30% this year. There's a lot of questions about the company's leader, Elon Musk. There have been issues about the company's cash position and its fundraising abilities. So anyway, there are questions that have been going on for Tesla for quite some time now, and it's one of the reasons why the stock is down so much. But generally, when you see this, you like to think that the company's biggest shareholders are going to sort of give it a vote of confidence. And that would mean by either purchasing more shares or just keeping their stake as is. But instead, what's happening here is one of Tesla's biggest shareholders is selling out now. And that potentially could be another bearish sign for the company.
And now, the SCED. Here's what to look forward to later today. Pinterest will report its first earnings as a public company after markets close. Unlike its unicorn peers that recently went public, Uber, Lyft, Pinterest shares have been rising. Our guide to all things IPO-related, Maureen Farrell, explains why.
It's not a total apples to apples, but in general, you know, when you look at Pinterest compared to others, their losses are now narrower, and they've sort of outlined a much clearer path to potentially getting profitable. And it's interesting. I mean, I think it really shows how investors' mindsets have changed even in the last 2 months or so. Because Pinterest, what people have told me is that it has a potentially smaller user base, even though they're going global. It's, you know, it's not necessarily the potential for exponential growth that some other companies have. At least that's how investors think. But their losses are much smaller, and they're getting rewarded for that, as opposed to Uber and Lyft, which have really spooked people with their huge losses and an unclear path to when those will end and when they could turn profitable.
And the Trump administration will unveil its immigration plan later today. We write that it's a fresh bid to try and remake immigration policy. The proposal includes an expansion of skills-based visas, which will be offset by new restrictions on family members' immigration. These skill-based visas will take into account things like education, English language ability, and high-paying job offers. In turn, there will be a 50,000-person cap on the number of refugees admitted each year, and the diversity visa lottery will be eliminated. Democrats immediately shot down the proposal, which doesn't include any provision for Dreamers. Finally, yesterday we asked you about having children in response to the news that the U.S. birth rate hit a 32-year low last year. So many of you wrote in. It was one of our most popular questions by far, and you had some really fascinating responses. Some of you cited career reasons, like Sally from South Dakota, who said she was waiting until her career as an investment professional takes off before having kids. Another thing that came up a lot, finances. Daniel wrote, I was 18 when the Great Recession hit. Some people lost everything. I'm terrified that the cost of children and student loan debt and a home and saving for retirement and saving for my children's college and saving for a rainy day will be too much. Thanks so much, all of you, for writing in. Today's question, it has to do with a new effort that's going to be unveiled today by the College Board, which is the nonprofit that administers the SAT. As of next fall, the SAT will provide colleges not just with your math and verbal scores, but with a new score that assesses the socioeconomic challenges faced by students. The SAT said, we can't sit on our hands and ignore the disparities of wealth reflected in the SAT. So we want to know, what factors, if any, do you think the SAT should take into account? Let us know. Tweet us at WSJ Podcasts or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.